Welcome to SoFi Stadium, the greatest stadium ever created. I'm David Meltzer, and welcome to the playbook. I am so excited. I very rarely get nervous. There's been a few people. One, believe it or not, was Joel Osteen, and got to meet him in person, ironically, with Hulk Hogan there with me.
That's an interesting talk about an
eclectic day. Second was Joe Montana.
Oh, wow.
And now the third is Tulsi Gabbard.
Wow. I'm
2020 presidential candidate, and she is in a class and a party of her own. And you're going to learn lessons today in the playbook to take all of us to appreciate aloha. Aloha, Tulsi Gabbard.
Aloha.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success.
Yeah, well, today we always talk to people who stand in service to the world that have a passion for the service that they provide and honestly believe that their service can change the world, whether it's a massage therapist, a doctor, digital creator, someone that provides a service and has a big passion for getting that message out to the world. And today we have Tulsi Gabbard with us, who stands in service to a country. I mean, how can you beat that? Somebody who's like, listen, I want to stand in service to the place that we live. I'm excited to dive in and understand what makes somebody want to serve a country.
Thank you. I think it's perfect, though, that we're starting on this note of service. I'm grateful that you, when I came in, you said thank you for your service. And I always respond, well, I'm the one that's grateful to have the opportunity to serve. But usually when people think of a path of service, they think of military, first mm-hmm. responders, law enforcement, maybe even those who are working in an ER, doctors and nurses.
Or teachers.
Yes. But that's kind of the point, is that whether you are working in any of those areas, or you're an entrepreneur, or you're a massage therapist. I met this woman who's a stand-up comedian the other day, and she is passionate about her comedy because she feels that is her service to make people laugh mm-hmm. and to bring joy in a time where it may be hard to find things to laugh about. Mm-hmm. And knowing that every one of us, in our own lives, in our own way, with our own skills, our own talents, can dedicate our actions in service to others to make that positive impact, that's where we find happiness. Because mm-hmm. mm. you can do all of those things. You can work in politics and be a very, very selfish person.
No.
I know. I was pausing for effect there and waiting for it. You can work in the military. You can wear the uniform mm-hmm. and be very self-centered mm-hmm. and be in a position where people respect you for the uniform, and you are dishonoring that uniform by working for your own selfish interests. In every one of these ways, it comes down to our personal choice of how we're dedicating our heart and our time and our energy. And just know that it applies to everyone, no matter who you are, no matter what your skills are, what you're doing with your life. It's such an important thing for us to remember at a time when I think there are too many people looking inward and kind of closing off what's happening maybe to their neighbor or coworkers or community, instead of looking outward and saying, hey, how can I be a part of the solution? How can I dedicate what I have to offer in a positive way in service to others?
I love it. I'm going to serve you up a softball, but it literally is the question that we ask all of our guests on the show. On a Friday, we're recording this on a Friday. On a Friday morning, you wake up. What is the number one thing that you're most concerned about today?
For so many reasons, the number one thing that motivates me and drives me because I'm concerned about it is that our country is defined by the freedoms and rights that are enshrined in our founding documents. These are things that, you know, there are a lot of people who've never read the Constitution. Mm-hmm. There was a clip of a woman on MSNBC recently, and it was clear she hadn't read the Declaration of Independence before. It's troubling because of the consequence of that we are living in a time where people in positions of power, as well as people who are just going about their daily lives, now question whether we should have free speech in America. Mm. who question whether or not we have the right to defend ourselves and our loved ones. People who question or think that the Fourth Amendment, which is our right to privacy and our right to civil liberties, well, in the age of technology and in the age of big government, that's no longer relevant. So for a country that has for so long served as the beacon of freedom, the beacon of democracy, this great example of what's possible in a free society to countries and people around the world, that light is flickering and is in imperative danger of going out. Mm-hmm. That is what's at stake right now, and that's what I'm most concerned about.
What's interesting about the size, scope, and scale of that problem, I'm a recovering lawyer, so looking at it, I think it's to the detriment, and my personal mission in this stage of my life is to empower over a billion people on Earth to be happy, and I segregate it to my specialty of my skills, my knowledge, and my desire of, I believe in abundance, so I want to teach people how to make a lot of money to help a lot of people and have a lot of fun.
Yes.
And I think those are core values of our country as well, even historically. But a lot of people don't think big enough, and they don't believe what I believe, which is one particle of light overcomes a million particles of darkness.
Mm-hmm. So true.
And so people feel helpless, they feel separate, they feel alone, and people ask me, I wanted to be the president of the United States when I was a little boy. And I will tell you, unlike today, the majority of the little boys and girls that I grew up with, one of wanted to be president. That was like a really cool thing to want to be.
Yeah.
And I have four children, and none of them put it in the top 10 anymore because I think they see this powerless, if I'm going to be in politics, I'm just going to not have any impact. Mm. How do we get people to understand what you obviously understand? Like, you get one particle of light. Like, if I can empower 1,000 people to empower 1,000, I get to a billion really fast.
Yeah.
And yet, because of media and because of the size, scope, and scale of our issues, people then hide from it instead of let it liberate them, just like in 1776. It must have been for those leaders, wow, like, I'm gonna take over England from here. Or, like, this is a big, that's take a big dream, out. Right? But they understood one particle of light built democracy.
Yeah.
And how do you, not yourself, but how do you communicate that to our next generation that, look, you have that light and it's powerful?
Gosh, thank you. That makes me so happy to hear you talk about your own personal mission. And just that example, one particle of light can overcome, you know, unlimited particles of darkness. It reminds me of the Martin Luther King statement about how, you know, hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that. Mm-hmm. And how darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that. And it speaks exactly to that. The answer to your question is quite simple. Because the answer is not some theory, it's not some idea that has not yet been proven. The answer to the question lies once again in the vision that our founders had for our country, where they faced things that we couldn't even imagine facing today. Mm-hmm. Martin Luther King faced adversity, true adversity, that we could not even imagine facing today. Mm-hmm. In the book that I wrote, For Love of Country, I spend quite a lot of time on this, specifically because people feel hopeless. During the civil rights movement, one of Martin Luther King's friends, who was a civil rights activist, was killed by white police officers. And it was at the church service honoring his life and sacrifice that he gave a powerful speech to a lot of people who were rightfully hurt, who were rightfully angry, and who were calling for people to take up arms and answer that violence with violence, answer that hate and racism with their own justified feeling of hate and hurt, and his courage to stand before his friends who were criticizing him for expressing the need to respond to hate and violence with peace and love is powerful. It was powerful. And And what's so, there's so many teachable lessons from him and the wisdom that he shared, but very relevant to this moment when people say, well, you know, what he conveyed is passé. It was a different time back then and it doesn't apply to us now. Mm-hmm. He could have very easily taken the line of, you know, you can only defeat racism with racism. You can only defeat discrimination with discrimination or hate with hate. Instead, he drew inspiration from those words laid out in the Declaration of Independence, mm-hmm. and reminded that crowd that all men are created equal, and we, every one of us, has these rights that are endowed to us by our Creator, and that's really the reminder. That is the reminder. We have this in our hearts, this light of love and kindness and respect. In a spiritual sense, exists within every one of us. We can choose to ignore it and try to cover it up with all of the noise and the crap and the violence, just all of this stuff that's swirling around every one of us, everywhere, every day, whether it's on the phone or on TV or people we know, whatever it is, or we can choose to be that person that walks in the room and expresses what we in Hawaii call aloha. Uh-huh. Yep. Aloha represents that light. Aloha represents that love and that recognition that regardless of our differences, whether they may be political or racial or religious or whatever it may be, when I greet you with aloha, and you know mm-hmm. this, when I greet you with aloha, it is a recognition that we are all connected. Mm-hmm. We are all God's children, no matter who you are or where you're from. And even as we are unique, when we come together in that spirit of aloha, we are empowered and inspired to see each other for who we really are and to see past all of the obstacles that very often get in the way of having real dialogue, real conversation, and being that person bringing the light to that moment.
Can I just mention one thing? Because mm-hmm. as I'm probably the oldest one here, it's interesting because you talk about facing far greater challenges. And being a sports agent in my previous life with Lee Steinberg, you know, I represented Lee Elder, who's the first black golfer to play at the Masters. Death threats for playing golf. Warren Moon, my business partner, didn't get to play quarterback because he was black for 6 years until he could prove he was the record holder until Brett Favre in almost every category in 17 years as a Hall of Famer. First and only black quarterback in the Hall of Fame still today to show you what they faced. But even more impressive to me of what is my mom, and I'm going to get choked up, sorry. But like my mom's my hero. But one of the stories that I heard recently that blew my mind, because I think I'm open-minded. I'm like, oh, we're progressing. Mm-hmm. My mom was a single mom. My dad left when I was five. Wow. In 1976, my mom couldn't get a credit card because you needed a man to get a credit card. Mm-hmm. And so when these kids tell me, the whole world, you know, there's so many more challenges. I go, the challenges that we have, your light will just destroy these challenges. And the other challenges are just human nature. Yeah. Go back beyond 1776 and realize that most of these are just learning from human nature. Mm-hmm. That love is the answer.
Mm-hmm. Love is the
and
answer.
That hurt people hurt people. Don't be a hurt person. And that's why leaders like you are so important to me. And I rarely get too nervous or excited with the 1900 podcasts I've been blessed to do with billionaires, millionaires, and entrepreneurs. But when I see a real light and a real leader, I get excited. And it's just honor to have you here to express what I believe is a message that everyone needs
to
hear.
It is the answer.
And it's the leaders that we need to express that. So,
and this is part of the problem with so many, obviously I've worked for a long time in the realm of politics, and rather than having real leaders who have courage that comes from a place of love, we have leaders who lack courage because they live in fear. Mm-hmm. They live in fear of losing the next election. They live in fear of losing power. They live in fear of, I'm not going to get invited to the White House Correspondents' Dinner this year. I'm not joking. Like they're,
I know.
You know, the things that people define as equating importance or status or whatever, they're afraid of becoming irrelevant if they lose that title, and they I like their whole identity is connected mm-hmm. to that title, which is why you say, like, God, why do these people stay in politics like for 50 freaking plus yeah. years? Or like, dude, like,
they can't get a job. Because they can't get a job. That's why they stay in politics.
Nobody hired them, is that what I'm saying?
But there's like, a friend of mine yeah. who I was elected to Congress with, I think he left Congress 2 years before I did. I left Congress and, you know, I have a lot to say about a lot of things. Yeah. And I said them when I was there and I'm saying them now. But he sent me a few text messages and he just said, wow, you have broken the mold in the sense that most people believe mm-hmm. that, and it was an experience that he had, is once he left, his phone stopped ringing. People stopped returning his calls. Nobody mm-hmm. cared what nobody was asking him, well, what do you think about what's happening in the Middle East right now? And he felt very small mm-hmm. and questioned his worth and value because what was there every day, all-consuming, surrounding, literally, snap of a finger, you're gone, and nobody's thinking about you anymore. It's just, and I know there are comparisons, I'm sure, across industries, but that's where people too often mistake love with weakness. That love means you roll over and let people walk all over you, or love means that you're just like in some false utopia of kumbaya. Yeah.
Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha spirit.
But that's where, you know, and I've served in the Army for over 20 years. I have served with the most hardened freaking warriors yeah. who put their lives on the line because of love.
Yeah.
I've met these moms who are doing things that they, your mom, doing things that they never ever imagined having to do. Why? Because she loved you and wanted the best for you. And so she had to step way outside of things she was comfortable in mm-hmm. doing. And that is, you know, we have to remind each other of that, mm-hmm. not only with our words, but through our actions, that love equals courage. Yes, love equals kindness. Love also means if you are someone who is bad, who is hurting people, either through your actions or through your politics, mm. I'm going to do everything I possibly can to stop you. Mm-hmm. That's love, is standing up for what's right and standing up for what's best for
but
others.
I think it's so interesting because so many people do have so much love in their hearts and they want to stand up for things that yeah. they truly believe in, but they don't out of fear, right? Yeah. Because they are scared. And in a world where and a country where we were built on freedom, they don't feel like they have the freedom to do that anymore because that's everything true. Is so divisive, right? Mm-hmm. So,
and there's legitimate fear that you might yes, lose your job.
Right.
Or just labeled.
You may lose
or
your
labeled,
family.
Or just labeled or from a social silo. Or, you could yeah. say one statement and then you're labeled into a whole group of people that have individual variable interest ideas
right.
and beliefs. Yeah. And this happens with party politics, mm-hmm. obviously.
Generalizations.
Like, yes.
It's yeah. a bucket and it would be like saying anyone that has hair like that all believe everything X, yeah. down this line. That's just, and it's, I think, a really challenging thing also to be a politician,
right.
to know that you're going to be bucketed and labeled mm-hmm. and categorized, whatever your party is,
yeah.
it's a detriment to feel like you're not listening to me. That's not right. who I am.
Exactly. Exactly. I've always struggled with labels for that reason.
They're for shampoo, and pretty soon I won't need any. So
there you go.
They want to get into the book.
Yes.
Yes. Because for the love of country too. How appropriate.
Exactly.
Right, yes, that we're talking
yes.
about.
But one of the things what I want to talk about the book, of course, but I also want to talk about, because you just brought this up, the courage mm-hmm. that it must take to one put your ideas in a book. In our world, everybody wants to write a book. Oh, I want to write a book. But then everybody is writing a book. Mm. Very few people have written their yes. book, have actually gotten it out, published, and they're sharing their ideas, probably because of that. They're afraid of judgment. Mm-hmm. They don't have the courage to put right. their story out there. So I want to talk about that because this is a theme with you. Mm. You are very courageous with your position, with your voice. Mm. You're very willing to put your position out there. And one of the things that we talk a lot with a lot of our guests about is that willingness to be judged. Mm. Like, it's okay mm-hmm. if you share your story and you're saying, that's okay, you can judge me. I used to think this way. I think this way. I might not think this way 10 years from now. And that will come with judgment. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about the book and that getting over that. How do you get the courage to even write a book like this?
Well, first of all, I missed like six of my book deadlines. Oh. So for a very long time, I was one of those people who was constantly like, yeah, I can't go to this because I'm writing a book. And I swear to God, the excuse started to sound really old, but it was true. I excellence is what I strive for. And so the finality of writing words on a page that will be printed and I can't go back and correct it or change it or whatever, it took a lot longer than I anticipated. But this is probably the only time in my life where I can say my delay and procrastination paid off, because this book was supposed to be out last October. Mm-hmm. It's coming out at the end of April. And it turns out that it's coming out at the perfect time when people are now starting to think about the 2024 elections. And so in my book, For Love of Country, it's called For Love of Country, Leave the Democrat Party Behind. Initially, I was going to call it Why I Left the Democratic Party, and I just went the more direct mm-hmm. route with that subtitle. But I wrote the book because I recognize the limitations of social media. You've got the tweet, you've got the soundbite. You know, mm-hmm. if I'm on live TV, it's like, all right, you got 3 to 5 minutes to talk about how we solve all the problems in the Middle East. Right. Good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck with that. But I really wanted to, politics itself can be so distasteful and it can be so divisive. And yet the decisions that policymakers are deciding, whether it's at the federal level, the state or the county level, it impacts our everyday lives. Mm-hmm. And so I talk about my experiences of how at 21 years old, I decided to run for office in Hawaii. I've never had a problem with thinking big.
Okay.
So some would either. Argue I'm thinking like, you know.
That's my problem, thinking too big.
trying to do all the things. Yeah. But at 21 years old, I didn't have a bachelor's degree. I had started school. I thought I was going to go into the film industry behind the camera. And was deciding whether or not I wanted to go and study political science and get a degree or actually go and just do it. And there was an open seat in our state legislature at the time. I'm very passionate about environmental issues and clean air, clean water, mm-hmm. clean oceans. And so that was the major driver for me to decide, like, okay, this is a win-win. I'll go, I'll do my best, offer to serve. If people say no, then they say no. And I will go and do something else. If they say yes, then I gotta go and actually do the things that I'm talking about doing. I had to decide which party to join at that mm-hmm. time. The Democratic Party at that time made sense to me because it appeared to be a party that was welcoming of people of different views, different mm-hmm. religions, different backgrounds,
clean air,
diversity
clean water.
Of thought, protecting the environment, freedom of speech, mm-hmm. civil liberties, civil rights. It seemed like the right fit, that this was the party of the people. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to where we are today, it's almost like you turn that model or that perception completely upside down. Mm-hmm. And sadly, I intentionally don't use the word the Democrats in mm-hmm. my book, specifically because I don't believe in the broad brushes and the broad judgments based on a title. Because there's a lot of Democrats in the country who feel as I do, who are frustrated as I am with the direction that those in charge have taken this party that was once the party of JFK, that was once the party of Martin Luther King. And they now are, you know, they are anti-freedom. You're not allowed to speak if you say something that offends someone else.
Really?
They and they alone. You'll get the memo if you haven't gotten it yet.
I live in the corporate world, so, and I'm 56 years old. I have to unlearn so much.
Just don't do it. it's literal insanity that we live in a time where it's not just random people on the street. We have people with great power, the power of the Department of Justice, the power of law enforcement, the power of their partners in big tech in some cases, deciding that your speech is hate speech. Your speech is you are spreading disinformation, mm-hmm. and we and only we are the ones who get to decide that. It's a problem when we have a government trying to save a free people from ourselves, telling parents, well, we know what's better for your kids than you do. And if you don't do these certain things, we may just come and take your kids away from you. Mm-hmm. It's a problem that parents don't have the freedom to choose where they can send their kids to school or how they want to educate them. If you have money, you can make that choice. Why would we discriminate against parents who don't have money? If they say, no, I want to homeschool my kid, or I want to send my kid to a charter school, or send them to a better school, whatever the case may be, there are individual rights, liberties, and freedoms that are actively being taken from us by those in power, many of whom are in charge of the Democratic Party. The Republican Party has a lot of problems as well. But this book, For Love of Country, Leave the Democrat Party Behind, really goes through my personal experiences, the lessons that I've learned along the way. And it opens and closes with this message of aloha and this message of love and really what the solution is. It's not just a book of gripes and complaints. It is a book that reminds us of the fact that our founders said that our government only exists with the consent of the governed. So if you don't like what you see, if you don't like what those in government are doing, well, they are there with our consent. If you stay home, you're saying, all right, go do whatever you want to do to me, my family, my kids, my community. If you say, well, my voice doesn't matter, well, you are giving them your voice. Mm-hmm. My vote doesn't count. Well, you are ceding your power to oftentimes nameless, faceless people who don't have your best interest at heart. We have to take back the power that our founders gave to us that is enshrined in our founding documents. And I'm not telling people who to vote for. I am telling you don't vote for Joe Biden and the Democrats.
That's how you do vote.
Because of all the reasons you'll find in the book, very specific reasons. But most importantly, question everything. Don't accept anything at face value. Be discerning and hold leaders accountable because they work for us. And if we turn our heads around, if we are blind to their abusive power, then they will continue only working for themselves.
Well, it's really interesting listening to you speak because there's a lot of power in giving yourself permission to change your mind.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people...
And to do so publicly.
And to do it publicly. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are in your position where they've held a belief for so long, and they've been affiliated maybe with a party for so long, and they're feeling these things, but they haven't given themselves permission to change their mind and be that hypocrite, you know? And so what would you say to somebody that's sitting there say, I've been feeling this, I've been thinking this, but I haven't made that change or that shift yet?
I think first of all, it's recognizing that in my case and for many Democrats out there, you know, as the saying goes, the party left me. It is not the party that I joined. It has become a completely different beast. Second of all, you know, let's take the politics out of the conversation and let's look at personal relationships, whether it be with your spouse or your best friend or your business partner. If we as humans don't allow ourselves to learn from our own experiences or to have a real conversation and you tell me how you grew up and I can learn about things that I've never been exposed to before. And I can tell you, well, I disagree with your opinion because in my time in the Middle East, here's what I saw and here's what I experienced. And for us to walk away from that being like, wow, I really learned something new today that's caused me to challenge my own thought process. If we don't allow each other to grow as people or ourselves for that matter, and sometimes that might, and I've done this, that sometimes might entail saying, I'm sorry, I was wrong. And I understand things in a completely different way now and recognize that this is the right path or this is the right decision. For me, when I see people, especially people in positions of influence and power do that, that's an endearing quality to me because that's an honest, authentic, sincere person who's not doing that, who's not making that decision out of fear. But that's actually an act of courage, and I think we should expect more of that rather than call people flip-floppers or hypocrites or if it is sincere.
Yeah.
If it is sincere. It's a human quality that we should encourage, not criticize, in my opinion.
I feel like it means we grew, right?
Exactly.
Being a hypocrite means
I don't know that I've ever seen out there you talk about this. Maybe there's a reason, so you can be like, no, we don't talk about this.
We don't talk about that.
At some point, you
she
have
didn't provide
this,
that list to you.
Yeah, right.
No, I didn't get that one.
I provided it to you, for me.
You don't listen to that.
Yeah. But at some point, you have this conscious decision. The party left me.
Yeah.
Then you're like, all right, so I'm going to do something about this. What is that first little runway like? I mean, are you like, you have colleagues from when you served in Congress? Yeah. You have like other people in the party? Are they like, Tulsi, you've lost your mind.
Yeah.
Or are they like, get out of here? Like you're
don't
a
let the door
like,
hit you on the way out.
Right. Yeah. Like how do you reconcile that? Because I think that's one of the biggest reasons why there is a fear around
being true
to ourselves. Yeah. Because what will happen is if I decide, like, I mean, and you talk openly about this, if I'm in an environment where everybody's partying and everybody's doing drugs, and I'm like, you know what, I don't want to do drugs every night. They're all going to be like, you idiot, and I'm going to lose my friends.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm going to also not do drugs, and I'm going to lose all of my friends. Like, did you, like, have this big vacuum in your world when you're like, hey, I think maybe slightly different?
I'm laughing because there's, like, memories flooding in as you're
talking.
As you're talking. I don't drink. I never did. I haven't done drugs. Like, that's a choice I made early on in my life, not my thing. And so as you're saying, just the example you gave, I remember when I first, after I went through officer candidate school in the Army, and we had some big social with all the officers, and one of the guys that was in our little crew, we were having dinner and they're having drinks. He had a lot of drinks, and he screamed in this room that was an Army officers club, so it was just filled with Army people. This was in Oklahoma. And he screamed at the top of his lungs. He's like, Tulsi, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why don't you drink?
Yeah.
And I was like, bro, what's wrong with you? But both in that example, but also others in politics, I have learned who are true friends.
They
and who are
friends.
Not.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, that's really the at the
some
core
people
of it.
Respect your
so
shift
there is
and
no
still
vacuum.
Friends.
There is no vacuum when you realize, like, oh.
They weren't there in the first place.
It's a validation
place.
Of who. Yes. I always tell people in coaching them, look, if they were your friends,
right,
then they would still be your friend.
Yes.
And it's so interesting. I always say all men are created equal only if we appreciate our differences.
Yeah,
and I think
true.
That one little clause, if we could go back and add in the importance of, look, this is what the country is built on.
Yeah.
Appreciation of differences. Mm-hmm. That's what makes us equal.
That's true.
Not trying to make everybody the same, believe the same, think the same, do the same, feel the same. That's not equal.
Yeah.
Equal is the ability to know oneness with aloha or love, to appreciate these differences. And as I learn and you learn and you say, hey, this club's not for me anymore, then my real friends are like, oh, well, why not? Mm-hmm. And then they appreciate that. And they say, what can we do to support you to find a new club? Mm-hmm. I still like my club, and it's cool. And if we just could make this one little point, so much wasted energy and hurt and hate and divisiveness could be resolved. I always say there's ease and dis-ease.
Yeah.
If we could just elevate and dissipate that dis-ease of I'm separate and I have a need to be offended and a need to be right instead of I have a need to appreciate our differences.
Yeah.
And that's where I personally love you as a leader. Like, I hear it. I haven't read this, obviously. I will. And if we can get people to say, hey, look, this is what this country really is.
Yeah.
And human nature is this way. And we can still be the greatest nation in the world. And I will tell you, as bad as some things sound sometimes when we do it, I am the biggest. Like, I travel the whole world, 200 cities. Every year, and I will tell you this, in all the international travel, there's no other country in the world that today you could be living on the street and decide, I want to be the best at this topic, subject matter, expertise, and it's the only country in the world you actually have that opportunity.
I agree.
The only one. And that goes a long way, because imagine if we all got together and continued on the progress that we built and stop creating more disease for no reason.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amen. I couldn't agree more. I think that's where You know, I have friends who have very, very different.
They're all cheering
views.
For Tulsi, by the way. Yeah. 1,000 new votes.
Something we're doing is working.
Yeah.
I have lost close friends, even some family, over political differences, with them making the decision that they didn't want to have anything to do with me. Mm. Nice. And yes, of course, it hurts a little bit, especially for people you're really close to. And it's unfortunate, but it also has revealed a lot about them and their decision to cut off ties. Yeah. It's also taught me a lot about those friends and those I care about and close to me who I remain close with and have chosen to remain close with me about even if it's a small group, I would much rather have that small group of real people, real relationships than I would having a whole phone full of people who were transactional. But you know, we don't have time to go into the many different, that's why I said, oh, which time? There have been many different junctures, like really big political decisions I've made that I knew were very risky. Mm-hmm. And that I had people close to me saying, if you do this, you may be ending any chance at any future higher office if you were ever to seek that out. But I made those decisions because I felt they were the right thing to do. Consequences be damned. And there were things like, you know, members of Congress, I would be walking back to the House office buildings from the Capitol after votes, and they would cross to the other side of the street just because they didn't want to, number one, say hi and like have a human interaction.
Yeah, right.
Or even worse, have some, you know, all the media cameras around take a picture.
God forbid.
I had my staff reach out to another member of Congress and saying, hey, you know, my boss and your boss have worked on this issue. You guys would be great to partner together on it. It's something you guys both care about. And the staff telling mine, like, no, we got to protect our boss because we don't want him to be infected. Oh. They use that word, be infected with your boss's political toxicity. Right. And so, you know, yeah, there have been very real reactions. But I know who I am. I know why I'm doing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And, If you're not like tracking in that same direction in the sense of purpose, not political labels or positions, but that sense of purpose, then cool, go have a good life. Mm-hmm. Take care. Aloha.
Well, something that's interesting, yeah. Obviously you're doing something right. Your name is in the news a lot. It keeps coming up. And you have the book and leaving a party. Well, one thing that people would say is, you have to make change from the inside. And there was a period of time it felt at least like that's kind of what you were attempting to do. But then they say, but if you don't have a seat at the table, then you're on the menu. Mm-hmm. What do you say to that? Because you're like, all right, I'm leaving the table. Mm-hmm. I tried the whole change from the inside thing. Now I'm going to just go and do my own thing. But like, yeah. Literally, you're the Tulsi party, right? Like you just are doing your own thing. So like, right. What do you say to the people that are like, hey, but that's how you change. You have to change from within.
Yeah. I did. I served for 8 years in Congress. I was a vice chair of the Democratic National Committee for several of those years. I ran for president in the Democratic primary in 2020. Throughout that time, trying my best to implement that change from the inside. And frankly, just got to a point where the resistance from all of the other people around this proverbial table was so strong. Not only a lack of openness to change, the right kind of change, but an outward resentment and opposition, and we must destroy her because of the kind of change that I was seeking to bring about that would bring the party, Democratic Party, back to the people. So for me, throughout my life, I have I don't seek a specific title or a specific job. It's about where can I make the most impact. So I left Congress knowing that I had maximized the impact I could make there and making as much good trouble as possible from where I am. But I am looking for, I don't want to just sit here and talk about what needs to be done. I want to be in a position where I can actually make those decisions and direct that change. I just don't know where that is yet, but I have faith that it will, it'll come to be.
Well, I do too. And hopefully that comes to fruition for you for love of country. by Tulsi Gabbard. Make sure that you pick up a copy. It comes out
April 30th. It's available for pre-orders on Amazon and TulsiGabbard.com.
Wow, wow, wow. This is David Meltzer here with the incredible Tulsi Gabbard. And all I have to say here at The Playbook is aloha.